Happy Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Suzanne Muchen will be here. You know, she's the co-host of The Big Payoff. It's a podcast about women in the workplace, issues such as that. I know John Williams was talking a little bit about Taylor Swift's new video yesterday, but that's just part of what Taylor Swift is doing to sort of renew her brand. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Andrew Herman will be here with some openings and closings. Oh, we're going to do we're going to introduce you to the Rapparoo. A Chicago inventor comes in to talk about her product, but also just about the journey of coming in and doing it. We're going to talk to John Najarian now, and who is on line six. Is that it? Line six. Okay. Hello, John. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thanks so much.
A couple lines engaged there. Wasn't sure which way to go. We might have been very embarrassed. I'm glad I found you. All right, so what happened?
I'm glad it was this one.
Let me tell you something. So I do the 10 o'clock news, and I saw the Dow. I saw the opening to the stock market. I didn't pay much attention. And then at like 10:05, I'm about to give the numbers. I call up my screen, and I said, on the air, I said, well, this can't be right. I'll have the numbers in a second. I couldn't believe that the Dow recovered as much as it did. What happened there?
Well, several things. Number one, of course, it was the reaction, as you said at the time, I'm sure, to the overflight of Japan by the Korean missile. It turns out, Stephen, that the Pentagon believed almost concurrent with the opening that missile was just a missile, not an ICBM. In other words, not capable of intercontinental flight, but just a very short flight. So in other words, this little weirdo just pitched a small missile, and the only direction he can go, he can't go to the north, he's going to hit Russia. He can't go to the west, he's going to hit China. He can't go south, he's going to hit Guam. So he overflew Japan with a missile just to do it, apparently.
So I mean, it wasn't so much new technology, it was old technology just kind of flexing because of probably these joint military exercises?
Probably. And the fact that it wasn't a missile that was capable of reaching much further than where it broke up and went into the sea was probably the biggest reason that the markets reacted the way they did.
All right. Now, so we got that. That's one crisis. Let's go to the other. When it comes to Hurricane Harvey, they're talking about how it might be the, I think, fourth most expensive hurricane in U.S. history. It's in the company of Katrina, Sandy, Andrew, things like that. So let's talk about who is suffering now. I know there's a lot of emphasis on the energy sector. Tell me about who's suffering. But then I'm also interested in if there are stocks and companies that are benefiting from this.
There are some that stand to. For instance, the ones that are benefiting definitely are refineries that had capacity that wasn't impacted by the shutdown in the Gulf. Obviously, oil platforms not pumping is one thing, but refineries turning it into the distillates, crude oil, turned into gasoline and diesel, those are pretty important. And many of those, of course, were impacted because so many are around the Gulf. Not the whole country, though, because we know we've got one right down there in Whiting.
Right.
And obviously, Holly Frontier, HFC, is probably the biggest beneficiary of this. If you look at where that graph has been over the past week, I believe I just did it a little bit ago on CNBC, I think it's up 15%. In the last week. So there's one that stood to benefit if indeed the storm got as bad as unfortunately this one has become. And so it's up 15%. That's a $4 jump for a mid-20s stock to go into the $31, $32 range. That's a pretty big move in a week.
When you are looking at what you're buying and selling, are you, this is probably a really obvious and stupid question, John, but I mean, is the hurricane weighing heavily on your decisions today?
It is making some. The hurricane is something that we're putting on some longer term positions in the likes of Flowserve, for instance, FLS. This is a company that, as you might imagine, the name sort of implies it, provides pumping equipment and so forth for moving water or other things, other liquids. And so FLS, that's one that we're watching and have been in for a little bit here. It's not like a bad stock to own at any time. Pays about a 2% dividend yield for the year. the stock is down about 20%. So we figure, okay, this is one, rather than buying it at the peak, maybe we're picking it up pretty cheap. So we kind of like that for Flowserve. But there are several others in that space that we've been trying to get on with the same outlook that they're going to need a lot of this. I was just down bringing my daughter to school in New Orleans, and they have 14 of their 16 pumps are not working.
Wow.
And it turned out, and they weren't driven into submission by a storm like this. Turns out they just weren't properly maintained, and maybe the people being paid to make sure they work weren't doing their jobs. Most of them have lost their jobs, in fact, because of that. So we'll have to see if there's much more to go there, Stephen.
Tell me about, I want to talk about consumer confidence in a second, but confident consumers buy things they don't really need, and Best Buy sells a lot of those. Tell me about what Best Buy is doing right now. And I'm interested in this headline that they actually are starting to hire at-home consultants, that they think maybe a way to increase business is to send Best Buy employees into people's homes to say, you know, you need surround sound here, or we can wire this there.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, their Geek Squad, and because not just for fixing your computers, but installing a lot of that technology. You just described one of them, surround sound. Others are, you know, various alarms and monitoring systems or anything else to do with electronics they sell. Geek Squad kind of does that. But now, as a way of getting more things sold, to have them being able to come into your house before the sale and help make the sale is something that they're exploring. The stock had fabulous results that they reported, but then the chairman also said that maybe this was not sustainable, this sort of level that they've hit, and mid-single-digit sales are not the new normal. In other words, he thought they grew a little too fast. Maybe he's guiding down a little bit.
Right.
Certainly took a lot off the stock today, probably more than he intended. But nonetheless, I do like the stock. I think this morning was an opportunity in there.
All right. Well, consumer confidence, as I said earlier, was up, beat expectations. Consumer confidence beat expectations last month. I would imagine that's got to be pretty encouraging.
It is. As much as there's been tumult and some volatility around the president, there has been nothing but very positive readings, you know, near record readings for consumer confidence. That's a good thing for the economy overall. And I think the home sales would be better if there was more inventory. There's not enough inventory. So a lot of things are going right, and inflation remains low, which is why, even with the overflight of that missile, Stephen, we didn't change a thing about our allocations.
John Najarian, love watching you on CNBC, and love it even more when you join me on Tuesday afternoons.
Well, thank you. You're too nice, Stephen. I hope to see you soon.
We'll do it again next week. A little bit later in the program, Suzanne Muchin will be along to talk about issues of women and the workplace. And more often than not, well, not more often than not, but often it comes down to fashion. You know what? Almost everything we're talking about with Suzanne has to do with clothing in one way or another. Dress codes at high schools, or the way the first lady dresses and is judged for that, all that. But none of that with Andrew Herman from DNA Info, who is dressed resplendently today. A little early for the sweater, I think.
Well,
maybe.
You know, it's hard to tell what the weather's going to be like because it's so cloudy out.
Have you changed out your winter clothes? I can't even say it with a straight face.
Oh, man.
Okay, let's go to Chinatown because word of a new retail development there. But you said that's sort of an indicator of a much bigger story.
Yeah, so this is a new building in Chinatown at 2300 South Archer, two-story retail place, plus parking. 40 different shops in there, opening in the spring of 2018. But I wanted to talk to you about this because I thought it was interesting because it's sort of a sign of this continuing explosion of people and business in Chinatown in Chicago, which, as it turns out, is kind of rare for Chinatowns in the United States.
I didn't realize realize that. Mm-hmm. So our Chinatown is doing better than their Chinatown?
Right. So in Chicago here, the population increased 26% between 2000 and 2010, primarily Asians. But when you look around the country at Chinatowns in places like Boston and Philadelphia, D.C., San Francisco, New York, those places are becoming less Asian.
Interesting.
So what you're seeing in some of these other cities, the traditional Chinatown is becoming more white. And some of the reasons behind that, the change is that the places that the Chinatowns are in those cities have become gentrified areas.
Well, I was going to ask you about that here because, you know, the South Loop and that continues to mm-hmm. expand and there's a lot of development around Chinatown.
Right.
So I thought maybe that was part of that. But you're saying that the population increase is largely Asian, too.
Yeah, right. And as you say, so we're talking about, I don't know what you want to call it, near South Side
right.
or far South Loop, but it's not generally what you think of as the gentrifying hotspots in Chicago. But I was reading a Pew report on Chinatown in Chicago that came out this week. It was very interesting. And it talked about why Chicago's Chinatown continues to hold in there in sort of the traditional way.
Okay, the negative one would be because we're still very segregated.
Well, that is how Chinatowns began.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the history of all Chinatowns, is that those are segregated neighborhoods. But what it talks about is that the community in Chicago, the Asian community, was able to buy land around there decades ago, and they've held on to it.
Is that right?
Yeah, and they sell it. When they do want to sell it, they sell it to other Chinese American people, and they advertise through Chinese media. And so if you're not Chinese, you don't even know
right.
things are up for sale.
So it's like getting the church bulletin, right, where they
right.
all the Catholics advertise on Sundays or
yeah.
the Jewish phone book or something like that.
Yeah, and so in Chicago's Chinatown is still a port of entry for immigrants, and one of the reasons is because the rent is still relatively cheap
wow.
there,
oh.
whereas in San Francisco and New York, if you were an Asian immigrant and you wanted to somehow get into the Chinatown there, you probably couldn't afford it. So it's still an affordable place for immigrants.
I like that because the story didn't turn out anyway the way I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be a different one. All right, let's go up to Wicker Park because I want to go buy gas from Gaspar Gomez.
Yeah, it sounds like a great place.
So this is a guy who's closing his gas station after what he opened it in 1977. Closing it October 30th, only because, again, gentrification. Someone bought his lot
mm-hmm.
and jacked his rent up from $9,000 a month to $16,000.
You know, it's strange. We publish dozens of stories about neighborhood stories on DNA Info every day, and I edited this story this morning. I said, this is not going to go anywhere, this story. This is just a
right,
nice little
right.
neighborhood story. It's one of our top stories all day long.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we have Gaspar and Esther Gomez, and they've owned a Shell station at Division and Damon for 40 years, and they're closing. And I thought it was an interesting story because it has some numbers that you may not get anywhere else. And it talks about how his rent has gotten too high. And he says he pays $9,000 a month now, which I had no idea how much a gas station would pay for rent. So he pays $9,000 a month now, and somebody has bought the land underneath it. They actually own the property, and they want
$25,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I said 16. I was wrong.
Well, 16. Difference.
Oh, 16
yeah.
increase. Okay.
Yeah. And
who edited this story? This must have been confusing to me.
Yeah. But it talks about the Gomez's life, and it talks about how they've worked 6 days a week for 40 years, which, you know, everyone thinks, oh, if I was only in business for myself, it would be great.
Right.
Well, the reality is sometimes you have to work 6 days a week.
And now he's going to retire and go help his daughter who runs a spa, and I worry for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy's going to drop in now and then, but the gas station business, very difficult business, very low profit margins. And I was reading an analysis on gas stations, and so you wonder, like, how much do you make a gallon?
Right,
so 3 to 5 cents a gallon is a typical profit for.
Wow.
But the real profits are obviously in the snacks. And I was reading a report, 35% of people who go to gas stations end up going inside.
30%?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's where your profit is.
Gaspar, you're charging too much for your little devies.
Yeah, that's right.
Andrew Herman, read more at DNAInfoChicago.com.
All right.
I'm going to speed up the show for this segment. Suzanne Muschen is in the studio, host of The Big Payoff, the podcast that you can hear at WGNRadio.com. And, well, as Spike Waddell used to say, we got 10 pounds of potatoes
exactly.
in a 5-pound bag.
I know.
All right, real quick, let's start. Melania Trump And I think this is unfair to her. She leaves for Washington to visit the Hurricane Center.
Yep.
And she's all decked out in heels and all of this stuff. And
6-inch stilettos.
I was going to say stilettos. Those were stilettos.
Yeah.
And the internet goes crazy against her. Come on, let her wear what she wants to wear.
Steve.
Yeah.
I just want to know if you want, because now I want you to look me in the eye. Is that actually your opinion that people made too much of that?
Yeah, she's the first lady. She's going along.
It's so tone deaf. It's just tone deaf. She has a right to wear whatever she wants. And I just want to be clear. This is not necessarily a gender issue. If you remember, Jared Kushner got slammed when he went to go visit the Middle East. And he was wearing a sport coat into the desert with a flak jacket over it that said Kush on it.
Well, what was the president wearing?
He was wearing a windbreaker and pants.
Okay.
And I'm just saying, she changed once she got onto the plane into sneakers, a ponytail, and a hat that said FLOTUS. The whole thing was just freaking tone deaf. There was no way that they were thinking first and foremost of the people on the ground. No way.
Okay, but so you're judging you're doing exactly what guys get in trouble for. You're judging a woman and putting intentions based on what she's wearing.
She's not just any woman. She is the first lady.
So we can do that to her then?
But I just said we did it to Jared Kushner too. When you have people representing the country, we just talked about Steve Mnuchin's wife last week. You have people in positions of authority, power, role models. I'm talking about their judgment more than their fashion.
Well, she changed so she won't stick into the mud. So that's
But did
good.
She change because she got the backlash while she was on the plane?
No, she had that back. She was packing. She had it packed.
Okay, packing.
I got to do the Mnuchin thing real quick because I have a story about that. So now Mnuchin and his wife, they got in trouble last week. They flew to Louisville.
They did.
It was the day of the eclipse, and she wore some things and
tagged herself on Instagram.
Right, and put down some regular people.
Right.
And now the theory is that they flew there. They didn't really need to go, but they went for the eclipse.
Yeah.
Well, way back when George Herbert Walker Bush was president, he was coming to Chicago to DuPage County for a fundraiser. He was running. No, he's vice president. He was running. And so he landed. The fundraiser was in DuPage County, but he landed at O'Hare and declared, I think it would have been the Des Plaines area, a federal disaster area.
Okay.
They did that all because then it was an official trip.
No.
Well, that's the way politicians work. So it's an official trip. Government pays for the flight. Now he's here. He can go do the fundraiser.
Yeah, well, I hope he would. I don't remember that, but I hope that he also was criticized.
I don't know, but I was there, and it was a different time. And so he comes off the plane, and there are maybe 10 or 15 of us reporters standing there.
Yeah.
Barbara Bush is with him. And I'll never forget this. There was a reporter for the Daily Herald who had a tape recorder. And he couldn't get close enough to record the president. So he handed his tape recorder to Barbara Bush, who was standing next to her husband, the first lady. And she takes the tape recorder and makes this face like, oh, my gosh, what do I do with this now? And she's holding it. And the reporter looks at her and goes, put it up to his face. So here's Barbara Bush holding a tape recorder in George Bush's face.
I loved her. She was great.
That's one of my favorite memories as a reporter.
That's so great. Well, look, the fact that they declare something an official trip and therefore we, the taxpayers, pay for it is really the issue here. So if she wanted to go see the eclipse, because certainly she didn't need to be there because of the McConnell
She could have
meeting.
Taken her Learjet to Nova Scotia.
Yes,
right.
Correct. She could have done lots of things. Louise.
Who would have thought that we were still talking about
this? I know, a week later.
Please make it end. Okay, dress codes.
Yes.
A couple of fascinating stories. One, a principal in South Carolina.
Right.
And she's at an assembly, sort of, and she says to her students.
She says the following, and it was recorded. She says, I've told you this before, but I'm going to tell you this now. Unless you are a size 0 or 2 and you wear something like that, meaning leggings, even though you're not fat, you look fat.
So the advice was, if you're over a size 2, don't wear leggings.
Don't
it doesn't
wear leggings
look good.
To school. So she
good
got
advice
recorded.
Or bad advice?
Inappropriate
good
advice.
Good advice or bad advice?
If you're a mother.
Good advice or bad advice?
Good advice as a mother. I wouldn't have said size 0 to 2, but
right.
As a mother or as an older sister, I would advise somebody I loved that leggings are challenging.
Even that would be hard.
It would be hard.
Older sister easier than a mom.
100%.
Yeah.
as a school administrator,
not so much.
I mean, the shaming girls already go through is really the problem here. And she was to some extent saying, and therefore that's why this is our dress code that you can't wear them.
Was the dress code that you couldn't wear leggings?
No leggings. It was sort of like the United.
And she's
thing.
Apologized profusely and said she feels terrible about it, and she's been there forever. And
would
I take
she
her
be
to word.
Apologizing if she was not recorded?
Well, if there hadn't been the backlash, maybe she wouldn't have been forced to address
right.
What she said. But,
yeah.
So that brings us, though, to Evanston, where you can wear or not wear anything you want.
Which is new. School started there yesterday, and it is an unbelievable split screen to South Carolina. So Evanston Township High School.
Well, it is.
Yes, correct. Right. On more ways than just this story.
Right.
Evanston came out with a new dress code that is incredibly generous in terms of giving students freedom. So it actually said that students, although they may not wear clothing containing violent language, images, profanity, hate speech, they basically can wear anything else, including hoodies, including hats. They're not telling people they can't wear, you know, a burqa or anything else that's a religious symbol.
Spaghetti straps.
I think they said okay on spaghetti straps. They said okay on leggings. And what this shows, because I think it's an amazingly powerful message to send to the students, is you do you. As long as you're a good student and you're respectful, we're not going to look so much at your clothes.
I think it speaks to what we're afraid of these days, where the old dress codes were all about sex.
That's true.
Let's not let these little kids have sex.
Right.
Please don't show me your belly
button.
Skirts
that have to be below if a girl holds her hands at her waist.
And now we're all afraid about hate speech and language and things like that. And so it's switched that way.
Yeah, it switched gears. And I wonder if, and it'll be an interesting experiment to see if giving them more freedom actually does result in positive things for both the culture of the school and, for that matter, academic performance.
Well, it's sort of like fighting a losing battle, right? So why pick a fight over a spaghetti strap?
When there's a lot more important things going on.
And I do feel for girls, young high school girls who try to dress fashionably, who just don't look good in the fashion.
No. And, so, again,
and that's why I'm kind of, the high school principal shouldn't have said it. But it's just so unfortunate that you...
But what about guys? And again, I'm not trying to go all gender here. I'm just saying, boys, it's always more forgiving. Their clothes are more forgiving. Their bodies are more forgiving. So you'd never hear anyone say to a group of boys, you know, when you wear track pants and they're a little snug...
Right.
You can't even imagine that conversation.
Part of that is, you're right, you're absolutely right. Part of it is because boys don't really care what you think about how they look in their clothes.
And girls do. But why is that?
Well, that's forever. But I mean, so then they make unpopular choices that don't fit them so much.
Right. That's true.
Yesterday, Jim Dahlke was here from Chicago Inno, and we were talking about a big raid for Outcome Health. They hired Nandini Ramani, who is a great engineer. She came from Twitter.
Yeah.
And Outcome Health is just one of these gangbuster stories.
Yes, they raised a $500 million round.
And in Dahlke's story, he points out that Ramani has been named one of the most powerful female engineers in the world.
Right.
And my Suzanne Mushin alarm went off. It's like, wait, because we can't say, you know, she was a Miss America. But it seems to me like this is a listing where... would be okay with.
Can I just correct a minute? I didn't have a problem with
me.
Okay. Here's what I want to say about this. It bothers me here as well.
It does,
to be honest.
Really.
It does. I appreciate that they didn't lead with it. The title of Jim's story is Outcome Health Plucks a Top Engineer. I would have been annoyed had they said a top female engineer. He didn't lead with that. The fact that they're pointing it out in the article, I find annoying. Why do we need to
bringing that
out? I'm sure engineer to engineer, head to head, my guess is she's at the top of the list no matter what.
I don't mean to call Dahlke out on it because others did it as well, and I like him a lot.
I like him too.
But in an effort to get more women in tech are made to be superstars.
Yes.
And so then there are these lists. Here are the top women in tech.
Yes.
Are you have an issue with the top women in tech list?
I think for the reason you just pointed out, no.
And don't you think that's why this list would have
been
created?
I'm sure that this list exists for that reason. And if so, look, we'd have to go a step further and say, is that why this list exists? right? I had sent Steve a picture that somebody had taken of the listing of television shows and sports channels, and it said tennis, and then right beneath that it said women's tennis, right? There are just times when you scratch your head. This one to me seems like not so much of a head scratcher because of the issue of we do need role models, and I appreciate that Jim didn't lead with it.
All right, Suzanne Muchen, you have a really super big weekend coming up.
I do. My son's wedding. Getting married.
Congratulations. Have a great weekend.
But I don't miss a show.
No, I'll see you here next Tuesday.
For the record, we're here.
I'm off next Tuesday.
Are you serious?
No, I'll be here.
Okay.
Right now, PJ McGuire is in the studio. She is an Chicago inventor?
Yes.
Bring that mic a little close to you. PJ, I should have warned you. An inventor and of the Wraparoo. We're going to talk to her about that. She came up with the idea and then developed it and is selling it now. And I think the idea is you want to encourage other people to go for their dreams as well.
Absolutely. It's one thing to come up with an idea, and tons of people come up with something, but they're not really sure what to do.
Right.
And they're really afraid of the entire process.
So earlier in my career, I used to interview writers all the time, you know, and authors, and they would have these books. And we would talk often about people who had a dream of a book or a book in them or a story in them. And before worrying about being published or whatever, they wouldn't just sit down and write it. And it was kind of a stifling thing. If you have an idea, carry it out, right?
Exactly. Just give it a try.
Tell me about the Wraparoo.
So what Wraparoo is, and I came up with this idea one morning. I was getting ready, running late, because that's just how mornings seem to go. And I ended up getting some hair product on a white silk blouse.
Oh, I've done that. It's awful. You can't get it.
It's just horrible.
What do you do?
You invent something. That's what you end up doing. And so I really just was thinking about the fact that there need to be something to handle all of the hair care, all of the beauty care, all the different things that I do in the morning to just look my best before I walk out the door. And that's how the entire idea came up.
And the Wraparoo is something that is like a shawl for your shoulders.
So what it is, it's a t-shirt hair drying towel that transforms into a protective styling cape. So you can wrap it on your head like a turban. It's very soft, very gentle on your hair. It'll start to dry your hair. You can put it on while you're still even in the shower. Then when it's time to style your hair, do your makeup, brush your teeth, all the messy stuff, it transforms into a cape that has two sides. One side absorbs all the drips and spills and mess. The other side is both water and heat resistant. So if you drop a curling iron, flat iron, any makeup, anything messy like that, that's dry messy, it keeps you completely clean and dry underneath.
And you've been selling it for 3 years?
Going on 3 years, yes.
How's it going?
It is going exceptionally well. I just last week was on Home Shopping Network.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, had a great time there and was also sold out there in December of last year.
So is it what you do now? Is this what you do or do you do something else as well?
I work full time as well. Yeah, so yeah. Sleep is not something
no,
I get
right.
much of.
But I mean, I ask that because it takes a lot of commitment. I mean, it's one thing to come up with something and then you got to really be out there and you got to be behind it.
Yes, definitely. It is truly blood, sweat, and tears, and some more tears.
So, how long did the Wraparoo live in your mind before it was available for sale?
Well, in my mind, it lived for about a month before I started working on the original prototypes, and then before it was available for sale, it was probably about 8 months.
Really,
almost a year.
That seems very fast.
I had a quick turnaround time. I was very diligent and very dedicated to bringing it to market.
Do you have a background that would lend yourself to that?
Absolutely not. Besides the fact that my grandmother taught me how to sew, that's pretty much the only thing I had going for me.
So what did you bring to it? I mean, what was your background before?
So before this, I've gone from pharmaceutical sales, medical devices, and then business development training.
So you had the business maybe acumen when it comes to putting it together and things like that.
That I did, but the actual product development, I was clueless.
What was the hardest part about bringing it to market?
I would say the hardest part has been really just finding good quality vendors that are honest and reliable.
You mean as far as selling it?
Across the board. Fabric vendors,
really?
Your materials, manufacturers. It's really challenging to find good manufacturing.
Reliable, I get. Honest. You've run into that?
I've run into a lot of challenges when it comes to honesty, potential lawsuits. There's been a lot of...
That's not good.
A lot of unfortunate things that have happened.
All right, so someone's out there listening right now, and they might have an idea for the Wraparoo 2 or something else. What do you tell them?
Well, I have a few tips that I typically give people. And the first one that I really tell people is you really want to think twice and spend once. When you first get started, there are so many services out there, and you think that every single one of them is what is going to make your invention a huge success, and you're going to sell millions and millions and millions of them. But it really isn't the case. So I always say, ask yourself two questions before you spend a dime.
Right.
And I guess this applies to life as well. But the first question is it necessary right now? A lot of things you may want to get for your business and may want to get for the invention, but you really don't need them at the time.
I'm going to get a new desk where I create my invention.
Exactly. Right. Use your old desk. Use your kitchen counter. Use your coffee table. Whatever is around, just use it.
What does it mean when you say find your tribe?
So when I say find your tribe, that means you have to get around other people that are inventors who understand what you're doing, what you're going through. You're going to be on the floor crying a lot because it's a really, really stressful process. And you need to have people around you who can support you, who understand what you're going through and can really give you true advice on what it is to do.
Smartest thing you did through all of this?
The smartest thing I did was make my father my business partner.
Is that right? Yeah.
By far the smartest thing
I did. And that's a financial decision or that's a guidance decision?
All of the above. My dad is truly my best friend, and he's the one that when I need open, honest advice, I know that he's going to not tell me what I want to hear, but what I actually need to hear.
You need those people.
Oh, yes.
Biggest mistake you made?
Oh, goodness. The biggest mistake I've made is spending more money than I needed to on things that I could have waited and done later.
So think twice, buy once.
Think twice, buy once.
PJ McGuire, where do people find the Wrap-A-Roo?
They can find the Wrap-A-Roo online on our website at www.wrap-a-roo, which is WRAPPERO.com. It's also on Amazon and for sale on Home Shopping Network.
Great to meet you. Congratulations. Can't wait for the next time.